everyone. Welcome to episode 164 of the Bronx Beat podcast presented by BP Bronx. I am your host, EJ Fagan. Tonight, I am joined by Derek Albin.
Hey, EJ.
And Dr. Paul Semendinger.
Hello, EJ. Hello, Derek.
You guys, it's been a week. I decided not to record after game four since I already let my emotions out after game three. If you want to listen to me get mad, listen to the game three episode. So it's been a week. We're going to talk a little bit about the ALDS, a little bit about the 2018 season, a little bit about current events. Before I do that, I want to apologize real quick. We have a little bit of sound quality issues. So if you hear a little bit of a buzzing in the background when Paul is talking, we apologize for that. We're going to try to keep it muted as much as possible, but it's going to happen for today. We'll get it fixed by the next time Paul is on. And I'll start off by asking Paul a question. Paul, how are you feeling after the ALDS?
You know, very disappointed. I predicted on this show that the Yankees would win the series in five games. I was really optimistic that they might do it in four or even three. I thought they could sweep, and they didn't. And, you know, the problem with game four was Boone made the same mistakes that he made in game three. He stuck with his starter too long. And then the Yankees, they just didn't hit. So it was a frustrating game and really a disappointing way for a season to end.
Derek, how about you? How did you feel after game four?
Just, I think, disappointed as well. I'm on board with, you know, being annoyed by Boone's, I guess, indecision, I guess. But the offense was really just a big downer. And it finally seemed to be waking up in that ninth inning against Kimbrel, but it was just too little too late. And then Sanchez just missing it by, you know, the smallest fraction of an inch you could probably even, you know, come up with of that thing being, you know, in the seats instead of being in Benintendi's hands in deep left. So it was disappointing. Yeah. It was frustrating.
Were a strong gust of wind away from winning that game.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about Aaron Boone. So neither of you were on that podcast with me on Wednesday night. So let's throw in game three as well as game four here. So, Derek, what was your reaction to Aaron Boone during those games? I mean, were some of us who were more angry than others being unreasonable? Was Aaron Boone just as bad? You know, should we be thinking about firing Aaron Boone? Like, what are you thinking here?
I mean, I was pissed. I've not really been a Boone proponent since day one, to be frank, and I was pretty critical of him throughout the season because this is something he's been doing all year, is waiting too long to pull starters. And, all right, it's one thing in the regular season for it to happen when the games aren't as crucial, but once it comes to the postseason and you're letting Luis Severino load the bases after he clearly has nothing and then the game just gets completely out of hand, that was a pretty awful, indefensible decision. And like Paul mentioned before, he did it again the next day. I was in the moment, I was pissed and I was thinking they got to can this guy right away. But in reality, I'm aware they're not going to do that. And it's clear that they're, you know, moving forward and sticking with him. But I was never a fan of going with the guy with absolutely no experience. And personally, I'd be happy moving on already. I just don't get it. I never really got the idea of just hiring a guy who had nothing, no experience, hadn't been on the field in, what was it, like a decade? He's only been broadcasting. So I was not a fan at all, but I don't think I'm going to get what I want at this point. So,
Paul, is Boone a Boone? Or is he a, I don't know what the opposite of a Boone is, but is he good or bad?
I am going to echo everything Derek said. I was not a Boone proponent. The Yankees thought they were brilliant in hiring him, but, you know, the truth was nobody else even interviewed him. So either Brian Cashman and the Yankee Brain Trust are the smartest people in the history of baseball, or at least in current baseball, because nobody even else considered this guy to be the manager. And why you would take a team one game away from the World Series and trust it to a guy who hadn't been on a field, who had never coached. I coached Little League, and I was not a great coach. But I coached Little League, and when the season started, I had more games under my belt as a coach than Aaron Boone did, which made no sense. We're not talking about a team that was rebuilding. We're talking about a team that had aspirations for going deep into the postseason and possibly winning a World Series, and the Yankees turned it over to a guy who had never, ever coached or managed at any level. And I think during the year we saw a lot of examples of Aaron Boone being smaller than the moment, letting other managers beat him. His team, I didn't feel, was prepared. Now, the Yankees won 100 games, and that's the argument for, well, he did a great job. And to be honest, it was not a team that felt like a 100-win team. But to go to the playoffs, we saw him make the same mistake 2 days in a row, which, again, as Derek said, is the same mistake he made all season long. He stayed with his starters. He had a game plan. And I thought part of the reason they hired Boone was he wasn't going to be a guy who was going to be married to a game plan. You use your best pitcher out of the bullpen in the biggest spot when you need the biggest outs. And he didn't do that. He went to Lance Lynn with the bases loaded and gave that game away. But all that being said, my big criticism was that he had never been a coach or a manager. And you know what? Now he has been. He has a year under his belt. He knows the players. He knows the team. And I actually wrote an article late last week that said, I'm okay with Boone returning.
All right, so I'm kind of in between the two of you. So I'm totally with you that Boone seemed like a perplexing hire to me, and I wanted to go for the more experienced guys. I think we have to question how much agency Aaron Boone has over some of these decisions in the modern game. I would not be shocked. In fact, we were talking about this a year ago when we said Aaron Boone's probably hired as a tool of the front office. And we heard lots of kind of reports along those lines, especially for things like bullpens and matchups over the season. So we've heard that Aaron Boone, that the Yankees like basically had a computer robot figure out like what the best matchups were for the bullpen and those kinds of things. And so, you know, to some extent, maybe Aaron Boone was just acting, you know, just following orders in some of the ways that he did things. I'm a little bit skeptical of that. I was fine with that basically the entire season. And I got very skeptical of it in games 3 and 4 when it seemed like the smart sabermetric like decision that all the other great teams are making is to pull the starter really early, especially given the depth of the Yankee bullpen, et cetera, especially given that CeCe Sabathia and Luis Severino, both of whom have not pitched great lately, that were the pitchers to be pulled. And to me, that was like the big decision he'd messed up. I think that there are probably some other good things going on, right? Like this was a team that performed well. It was a team where the players seemed to like Aaron Boone. You know, you go into a series against the Red Sox, one team has to lose, right? One of the two great teams is going to come out the loser of that series, and it just happened to be the Yankees. And they were a gust of wind short of bringing it to game 5. So I do think that whatever premise held for Aaron Boone still holds. Whatever reason the Yankees hired him, I don't really see any reason not to hire him. And he had a successful first season. But I need to see him learning from his mistakes. And so, you know, if it comes to the next playoffs and he makes the same mistakes again, well, then that's a pattern. And then you can't, you have to get rid of them. But for now, I wouldn't be shocked if he becomes a whole different manager for next year and he starts to pull starters earlier or whatever. More thoughts on Aaron Boone before we move on?
I agree with you entirely. And that's a lot of what I was saying is he now has the season under his belt. You have to expect that he grows. And the one thing that he did do was he did make tough decisions during the year. He benched Greg Bird, for example, and he took Brett Gardner from a starting position and moved him from the top of the order to the bottom of the order, and he sat the bench a lot late in the season. And he did this kind of stuff without any backlash from the players, seemingly, and the media seems to love him. And so he's obviously doing some things very well as far as the interpersonal areas, at least it seems from afar. And you know what? That in the New York media is gold. So I agree with you. If he does the same bad stuff next year, I think, again, it's time to let him go. But I think he has deserved a chance to be the manager for 2019.
All right. So let's move on a little bit. Let's talk about the 2018 season as a whole. So I'm going to ask you a big question here. Big question. Are you disappointed with the 2018 New York Yankees, Derek?
it's hard to say you're disappointed in a 100-win season, knowing that so much random crap can happen in the postseason, as it always does. So I think on a whole, I'm not. I'm disappointed in what happened in the postseason, but as the season as a whole, I'm fine with it. I was kind of cranky, I think, late in the season, just mostly because of the Red Sox just being so dang good, you know, and that, and it, you kind of lost sight of the fact that the Yankees were on their way to winning 100 games. But I will say, I think this season was not very, I don't know, I didn't enjoy it as much as the prior year. You know, and I think a lot of that had to do with the Red Sox just being dominant. And I don't know. I don't know if that equates to disappointment, but I definitely, on a fun scale, I did not find this year as entertaining or enjoyable.
Paul, were you disappointed by the 2018 Yankees?
I have to say yes. And again, I'm going to echo a lot of what Derek said. Now, some of this, I've done some soul searching after the season. This was my first season that I blogged all season long, and I would express my feelings all season long. So maybe as I tried to look at the Yankees critically, I was too critical, because I did not really enjoy the season as much as I really thought I would. I would think that if the Yankees won 100 games, you'd feel like they were winning all the time. And for whatever reason, it did not feel like they were winning all the time. It felt like they were losing all the time and playing poorly all the time. And the visions of Aaron Judge in the first half and Giancarlo Stanton for much of the season swinging at strike three on a pitch that's way out of the strike zone in the lower dirt, far and away, and they're swinging up at their shoulders time after time, was frustrating to no end. And that's sort of the vision I have and the last memories I have of the 2018 Yankees. They were great. They won 100 games. They made it to the playoffs. That's what we always hope for. But there's something that just wasn't fulfilling about this squad.
That's interesting. You know, I think that, you know, happiness is expectation, or reality minus expectations. And, you know, you have a very high expectation after last year going to Game 7 of the ALCS, having this really fun young team of a bunch of players who look like they're about to go start Hall of Fame careers. And you got some of that this year. You know, there was a lot of performances this year to be really proud of. And then there were a lot of performances that were pretty frustrating and were either like Giancarlo Stanton, like very good but lower than expectations, or like Gary Sanchez, which was, you know, downright disastrous. And I definitely feel there was definitely like an element of frustration throughout this series because it felt like the Yankees could be better. But they were the second best team in baseball by run differential. They were tied for the second best team in baseball by wins. You know, and they were better by far than any team in the National League. Like it does feel a little bit like the Red Sox are a big portion of this, and you can't feel as triumphant when you're, you know, going for a wild card slot. But you know, something, it was an injured season too. I think that's something we're losing sight of. Like the Yankees' best players all went down with injury for the most part, right? Like you had the injuries to the long injury to Aaron Judge, the double Gary Sanchez injury, the Didi Gregorius injuries, the Aaron Hicks injuries. You know, the Yankees really never, after May, played at full strength. I think it showed on the field.
That and I'll also add, like you were talking about some of the performances that were frustrating. It was kind of like the beginning of the season was a high, and then it just kind of gradually went downhill almost, even though they kept on pace to win 100 games. You know, you had Severino basically, you know, struggling, and Judge getting hurt midseason, as you mentioned. Like, all these things started to pile up, and then they finally got healthy at the end of the year, but they just ran into this Red Sox team that they, you know, couldn't figure out, basically, and that just kind of left a sour taste in, I think, everybody's mouths.
Yeah, and like Luis Severino, I think, is a good example of that. A player who looked like he was a Cy Young winner in, you know, on June 1st and then just had a horrible second half of the season. And, you know, still we're going to talk about in future episodes about what the hell's wrong with Severino. But, you know, that if it was the opposite progression, that he started off really bad and then was like an ace for the second half, even if like the playoff result was the same, I think it would have felt much different. And you know, we can point to other players that that's also, you know, a little bit of the case. I want to move on though. Let's talk a little bit about current events. The worst news of the week, maybe as bad as losing Game 4 of the ALDS, came at the Aaron Boone's post-series press conference. We learned that Didi Gregorius injured his elbow at some point during the Red Sox series in Fenway and will undergo Tommy John surgery. So, Derek, how long do we expect Didi Gregorius to be out for? And is there a range, right? So could he be back by spring training? Could he miss the entire season? Like, what are we expecting here?
It's not totally clear, but it definitely does not sound like spring training is remotely an option. It seems like a midsummer type of deal. It sounds like All-Star break, maybe, you know, in a reasonable scenario, maybe best case June, but in all likelihood, I don't think we'll see him until after the All-Star break, and that's a pretty big loss for the Yankees.
I mean, Didi Gregorius was a 5-win player. Paul, how has this changed the Yankees? We're not going to talk about the offseason too much, but generally speaking, how does this change the Yankees' offseason plans?
I don't know how it changes their offseason plans, and again, we're not going to really talk about free agents and all that. Because what they have to do is they have to decide if they want to spend big on a guy or whomever to possibly replace Didi Gregorius when they think that he might be coming back. The worry is that if he doesn't come back, and you never know how a guy is going to perform, and you never know how much rehab time he's going to need, and if he's delayed a month, and they're looking at the All-Star break, and he's delayed a month, now you're looking at mid-August, and if it takes him a couple weeks to get going, the Yankees might not really have him till September or later at full strength. And the worry is that they're going to say, well, we'll just hold it together. We'll put Tyler Wade at shortstop or Ronald Torres and just let it ride until Didi gets back. And if he doesn't play for 80% of the season, the Yankees are really going to find themselves in a weaker position because they're losing their 5-win player. And the other thing they're losing, and this is, I think, a problem in the construction of the team, is the fact that he is one of the only few guys who can hit left-handed on the team and has a left-handed presence. And the Yankees have always been built on left-handed power, and they're really devoid of that, especially now without Didi.
Yeah, so I'm thinking about Didi Gregorius as a DH, at least part of his rehab. I mean, we've seen other players kind of do that. Shohei Ohtani's going to be doing that for much of next year. So I wonder if they can bring him back a little bit as a DH. Though, Derek, let's just assume that that's a possibility. That, you know, from May through, you know, the All-Star break, he could play without damaging himself as a DH. Would you want that?
That hadn't crossed my mind before, but that's not a bad idea, actually. Especially considering that this is Didi's last year under contract before he's, you know, a free agent. This is his last arbitration in the year. And I think you want to get as much out of him as you can and also just see how well he's responding, too. You need as much time to evaluate because he's a guy that, you know, under normal circumstances, if he was healthy, he's a guy you're thinking you might want to sign long term after 2019. So I actually kind of like that idea to see, to try to get as much time to, you know, self-scout and evaluate and see if he's ready and to see if he's worthwhile keeping on. I mean, there's other options, of course, internally. You know, Paul mentioned Torres and Tyler Wade, but I mean, Gleyber Torres can also slide over. So there's guys who can play there internally while he DHs. I mean, the other issue is obviously the whole elephant in the room is Manny Machado, and then you got, oh, do you want Andujar to DH because he's so terrible at third base? Do you want Stanton to still have time to DH? It's a multi-layered issue that there's no easy, quick fix. There's a lot of different moving parts that you have to shuffle around. Especially if, and I'd like your idea, but it still causes a lot of other roster issues by, you know, having DDDH full time for a month or two, whatever it might be.
Yeah, you know, Paul's point about him being the only left-handed hitter, I think it's just so important, and definitely when we get to the off-season talk in later episodes, I think that's something we're definitely going to address. So, Paul, I want to ask you: would you prefer the Yankees go the sign a full-time infielder of some kind, and Didi Gregorius eventually kind of slots back into the infield and people get shuffled around? Or would you prefer they sign someone who's probably on any team a backup, like a Neil Walker type, better than Neil Walker, but a Neil Walker type. Would you prefer we go that route to replace him, and maybe Torres slides over to short, or you know, there's some kind of shuffling going on that's temporary?
Well, one option would be you move Torres to short, and you play Neil Walker at second base. I think Neil Walker showed, and has always shown, that if he plays every day, he seems to do very well. He didn't do well in a capacity of a guy who's going to step in and step out and be a bench player. But, I mean, you could do worse than having that. I don't want to see the Yankees spending a lot of money on a guy who is really just going to end up being relegated to the bench as soon as Didi comes back. That doesn't make any sense to me.
And do we think there's nobody internal, really, that you're comfortable with for a couple of
months? If you're talking about Torres?
Tyler Wade, and I'm trying to think of some other options. That's pretty much it, yeah.
Yeah, no, neither of those strike me as the answer to be a guy who's supposed to be playing shortstop on a regular basis on a team that you think is going to contend for the pennant.
It's Manny Machado or bust. I mean, that's the solution to me. We don't want to go too far into postseason, but...
Plenty of Manny Machado on future episodes. Yeah. We're holding back. We're going to have a whole Manny Machado episode, I promise everybody, where I'm going to make the argument to get Bryce Harper instead. But we're going to have a whole Manny Machado argument.
That's my whole left-handed bat thing.
Well, the whole left-handed bat thing, that is coming into another episode very, very soon.
All right.
So I have some other off-season, pre-off-season stuff I'd like to ask about. Did we learn anything during the ALDS in the last couple of days of the season about any of the following players? I'll start off. I'll name one player at a time. Let's do this fairly quickly. So Derek, I'll start with you. Did we learn anything about Gary Sanchez?
I think we learned that he's still great. You know, his final at bat of the year, the bat against Kimbrel, was an excellent at bat. He had a bomb at Fenway Park. I don't think his numbers overall in the series were anything overly special, but I noted in my mind that he had great at bats throughout the series, and he really looked like the player that we kind of expected him to be. And defensively, I mean, you didn't hear one peep about his pass ball issue because I don't think he had one. So I'm very happy about what we saw from him, even after a disappointing regular season. It was almost like he needed a fresh start, and it's hard to look up at the scoreboard every time you go to a bat and you got the 180 batting line, and then when you go to the postseason, it just kind of starts fresh. I'm wondering if that was a nice little reprieve for him, and the vote of confidence, too, to say that, you know, we're going to play him. I mean, anybody who thought that playing Austin Romine in the wildcard game was a better idea, I mean, it's just silly. You know, Gary Sanchez can do things that a lot of other players, or really almost every catcher in baseball, can't do. And that's why he played. And I think he showed that he's still capable of being a star in this league.
Paul, did we learn anything about Miguel Andujar?
We learned that the Yankees really do not trust his defense in a big spot. We learned that. And we learned that it's silly we didn't get into this earlier, but the Yankees didn't play him at all in a game. They lost by one run, and he was, I would argue, their most consistent hitter from day one through the end of the season. And it looked like the Yankees valued the defense that he couldn't bring rather than the offense that he could. And that concerns me because, as I've talked about before, there have been plenty of guys in the history of baseball that were batting first, offensive first, third baseman, who learned how to become adequate, if not excellent, defensive third baseman. And I'm still hopeful that Andujar can be that. And I would have rather seen him playing third base in that last game.
Derek, did we learn anything about Luis Severino?
No. I think a lot of people want to say that he can't pitch in the postseason, but I just think something's off. I don't know if there's an injury or if there's the pitch tipping that people want to talk about or his mechanics are out of whack, but or if he's just tired. I don't know if we learned anything. I'm a little, I guess, you know, I think it's fair to be worried about him going into next year, but I don't think this is, you know, necessarily indicative of anything down the road. I kind of want to see how he comes back in spring training and opening day next year to really have an idea if we really, you know, should have gleaned something. But at this point, I don't think so. It's only two games that we could really rely upon.
Yeah, I mean, we thought that he was kind of pulling himself out of a dive, and then it feels like that was just a quick kind of operation.
Even that game against Oakland, and, you know, he had five strong innings, but he was a little wild
in that game. His command
was all over the place, and he kind of ditched his fastball, I think, after the first inning, it seemed like. So even though he, you know, ostensibly was successful, he wasn't great. So I think that game and the game against the Red Sox is just too small of a sample to learn anything from. I mean, it's certainly easy to be worried, especially after how he finished his regular season. But I don't have any big takeaways from it, other than I just hope he's all better to start next year.
All right, last question to both of you. Paul, you'll go first. When you think back years from now about the 2018 season, what memory will you have? What do you remember most about this season that sticks out to you? Let's stick with the positives. So, like, what moment do you think this season kind of was the best part of the season or the most memorable?
Wow, that's hard. I didn't think you were going to go there. And then when you said the most memorable, I said it earlier in the podcast. Guys striking out on pitches way out of the strike zone. That's
nah, positive. Come on, we're ending on a good note.
We got to end on a good note. You know what? That they came together at the end. That last week was great. The 17-1 stretch early in the year was great. And the fact that they won the one-game playoff that I was very worried about. I didn't know if they could do it. And they did. They made it to the ALDS. They got a year under their belt. Oh, and the best thing was Miguel Andujar and Gleyber Torres just being superstars and setting the framework for what I hope will be outstanding careers. So those are my best takeaways.
Derek, what's your memory of the season?
I have one very specific one that I'm not totally sure you guys will remember because it goes all the way back to April. I actually only went to two games, maybe two or three games this year, which is a low for me. But one of the games I went to in April was against the Twins, and the Yankees just destroyed the Twins in this game. And it got so bad that the Twins brought in Ryan Lamar to pitch, who was an outfielder, and Tyler Austin just unloaded an absolute moonshot off him. I don't know why. I mean, that just sticks out in my mind. I know it's very random, but I think that game, Gleyber Torres also got his first career hit in that game, and I don't know why that doesn't stick out better, but it's that Austin home run for some reason that was just so hilarious because I'd never seen a position player pitch in person, and I was just so excited and to see Austin unload. I know it's very, very random, but that's my probably most positive memory of this year.
Hey, can I add one more? When you mentioned Tyler Austin, and I thought back to that series against the Red Sox and the brawl.
Oh, that was mine. Come on, you stole it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, okay. Keep going, Tell me about the brawl.
And the fact that Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton basically moved the entire Red Sox roster from the field into their dugout.
Thing of beauty. Thing of beauty.
That was the greatest moment of the year. And maybe that's why the rest of the year was a disappointment, because nothing could top that. They should have done that in September, and everybody would have gone into the winter happy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just watching Gary Sanchez just pound through whoever the Red Sox catcher was that day, that was a good brawl. That is the I'll frame it bigger. It's the year the rivalry was renewed, right? We finally met the Red Sox in the playoffs again. It was a year where both teams were really competing for the division for the first time in a long time. You know, we had some acrimony. We had some fights. You have this, you know, great young core on both teams. And I think that's I'm happy that's back in my baseball life. It makes everything a little bit more exciting. That's about all we're going to do for today. We're almost at about half an hour. Here's what the upcoming schedule is going to be: off season all the time. So starting next week, we're going to talk about some big picture stuff. We'll talk about, you know, specifics. I'm sure Manny Machado and Bryce Harper will come up. I'm sure, you know, Patrick Corbin and all those guys will come up. We're going to talk about contract extensions. We're going to do the whole thing. I'm excited for the next couple of months. It's always a fun time, the podcast. It's actually easier than talking about games during the middle of the season. So please keep an eye out for all of that. Please follow us on Twitter @BronxBeatBP. Please tell your friends about the show. We're very excited about the show. I've got some fun stuff planned for the off season. So there's that. Thank you guys both for joining me. Everybody else, this has been your Bronx Beat Podcast.